Despite the stresses of training and practicing as a physician, how do we retain intimacy in our relationships? How do we connect to other people despite our busy lives? How do we pursue dating as a single physician? Learn the answers to these questions and many more on this episode of the Talk to Me Doc podcast. It's a month into 2021. You're finally ready to commit to this year being better than the last, but you're still spending your evenings catching up on notes when you could be leaving work in a clean state. OnTime MD teaches physicians critical time management strategies tailored specifically for the unique demands physicians face. Strategies cover the exam room, inbox and EHR, meetings, and more. Popular module, How to Delegate Without Dumping, addresses how to delegate tasks to your staff in a way that doesn't make them feel dumped on, but inspires them to do their best work. Course creator Phil Bauscher, pediatrician and podcaster, wants you to join other physicians who understand the value of their time but are struggling to make it clear and executable plan of action. Join today and save 15% by using the code 2021 at checkout. You also get a money-back guarantee if you don't reclaim 3 hours a week in the first 2 months. Now is your chance to join OnTime MD and reclaim your time for good. Go to drpodcastnetwork.com/OnTimeMD to get started.
Welcome to the Talk to Me Doc podcast, where it's all about serving the early career physician. Let's talk about the unique issues that face us so we can create a better future for ourselves and those to come. And now your host, Dr. Andrew Tisser.
Hey everybody, it's Andrew, and welcome to the Talk to Me Doc podcast. For my returning listeners, thank you so much for joining me again. For my new listeners, you're in for a treat because today, like on every episode, we're talking to the best guests from all around healthcare and beyond to discuss issues relating to the physician early in their career. Today, my guest is Dr. Lisa Tharler. Dr. Tharler is an internal medicine pediatrics trained, a hospitalist, and founder of the According to Dr. Lisa community. She's also the founder of Under the White Coat community and is a sex, love, and relationship coach for female physicians. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Lisa onto the show. Dr. Lisa Tharler, welcome to the Talk to Me Doc podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Likewise. Thanks for coming on the show. I've recorded a little bio about you before, but for the audience, could you introduce yourself, who you are, what you do, and your role in medicine today?
Of course. So my name is Lisa Tharler. I'm a full-time physician trained in internal medicine and pediatrics. I am on my second to third year, going into my third year out of training as an attending. I work as an adult hospitalist, was frontline COVID this year. And then the other hat that I wear that's been very important for me is as a relationship, intimacy, sexuality coach for physicians.
Well, that's really interesting. How did you get into the relationship coaching space?
Yeah, it's not such a common thing to put together, right? It's not the thing that I thought in medical school, oh, this is the logical next step. For me, this began as a personal journey. It was something that I really needed and required. My history is that I went to acupuncture school before medical school. So by the time I was in medical school, my relationship, I was newly married and had two children during medical school with my MPH, so part of that five-year period, and then had my third little guy as a resident. And so all of the things that can lead to relationship disconnect and having difficulty in putting in the energy and time and learning relationship skills that you would probably learn if that was your focus just did not happen, having young babies and being in the intense training phase. And so it started as a personal journey because I wanted to be someone that had a strong family, that was happily married. And so not just married by paperwork, but actually happy and supported and creating the partnership that I wanted. And so I started training, really wanting that for myself, wanting that for my children. And then you know, I think as physicians and as women, we tend to be very generous. So when we learn something that really changes the trajectory of our lives, we want to share it with other people that we think we can help.
Yeah, I think that's really true for any of us that do some coaching work and consulting work, et cetera. I think it's a lot of it comes from personal journey. So yeah, I think that's great. So, I mean, I think as we go through our medical training, whether or not we have a significant other or we're dating or what have you, there's certainly a lot of challenges. And especially for those of us who perhaps have a partner that is non-medical, who's... I'm married to a physician myself, so at least we kind of understand what the other one's going through. But for those of us that do not, you know, what kind of advice can you give to help maintain intimacy, to help maintain that relationship while going through the rigors of medical training?
Yes. And, you know, that's my personal experience. So my husband is non-medical. And so that was the exact spot that we landed in. So I think, you know, painting broad strokes, I think creating a really strong foundation, there's specific practices that are required. And, you know, just kind of realizing that it's worth putting in effort on the front end to these practices, to spending certain time around specific issues. It's almost like, you know, as a generalist, how I think of as preventative care, like this is really how you create the strong backbone. And so there's three practices that I recommend people weave into their relationship to really keep the intimacy going, right? Because it's very easy in any kind of partnership to get disconnected. We can lead very different lives, you know, with either our careers and not really connect when we come home. Especially the challenges of, you know, parenting, it could really lose that intimacy and that connection. So I think, you know, the first part is just realizing that it's important, that there's nothing wrong or broken in your relationship. It's not an automatic, it requires effort, like the same way we take time to work out, to look at our nutrition, to do preventative things. These are really strong preventative measures for keeping your relationship strong. So there's three things that I recommend people do regularly. The first one is creating safety in your relationship to be your full self. So setting aside time beyond all the other things, all the logistics that you might do in your partnership, right? Like if you're living together, you know, how are we going to do bills and housekeep and all those things, but setting aside time to be your full selves in your intimate relationship. And so there's something I do, and it comes from a book by Carolyn Elliott, which is a sandwich practice. So actually taking time for each person to share three things. One is their desire. What do they really want? And you could pick how you want to address that. It doesn't have to be around your partnership. It could be around career goals. It could be around upcoming holidays with or without family. It could be really about anything, but making sure that you're connecting in the deep, intimate ways we need to. The first one being, what do you really want? What are you afraid of? And then the third way I like to connect is some people talk about like shared goals or values. I like to talk about kind of this idea of journaling or talking to your future self. So in a year, talking to future us as a couple, what do we imagine? I just think that's a funner way to do it. If you like playing in goals and values, to me, that just feels a little flat. So talking about our future selves in 6 months, in a year, what would we be experiencing? And bringing in that vision so that both people can touch and taste it. So those are the three things that I recommend people set aside time to do regularly. It's very easy to get disconnected and not intimate if you feel like you're not sharing your deepest desires with your partner, if you're not able to talk about your fears, and if you don't have kind of this very shared vision that both of you can see and smell and taste and feel into together. Those three things really build intimacy. And the structure I recommend is a holding space structure. So you set a very specific timer, you know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes. I'm thinking more trainees. Certainly you could do it longer if you have the time, but if you're in the pressure cooker of training, just taking regular time, even for 10 minutes. And the one person would say, tell me about what you really want and are desiring right now. And every time the other person speaks, you stay connected, you make eye contact, and after they share, you just say thank you. And then at the end of it, the other person would potentially have a turn. And so this is the format of holding space, of bringing in that intimacy, so that you're really taking in the full experience of the other person that you're living with, that you're partnered with, that you're sharing your life with. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's great. I'm taking notes. So I mean, that's great. Yeah, really talking about desires, fears, and your future selves together and holding space with each other, which holding space, I think, in any kind of context is a challenging practice in and of itself, right? Even in the coaching relationship, you know, being able to hold space for your client as a coach is a challenging practice sometimes. So I think, like anything else, this is probably something that people have to work on.
Yep. And so you want to come into it with an attitude of openness, of curiosity, of giving your full attention and presence to your partner, and then being non-judgmental. You're just taking in what's true for them. And for the person speaking, realizing that sometimes when you get the space, all sorts of interesting things bubble out. So this is not... this is an exercise in imagination and in sharing, not to get it perfect because you're logistically going to create the vision, right? This is just an exploration. So for example, if I'm talking about what I desire, I may say all sorts of things. And then maybe at some point, at the end, maybe two or three of those, I may say, you know what, there's two or three of these that really resonate me. Can we pin time to like totally flush those out? But this is an exercise in exploration. So I want to make that clear. This is not, you're not taking notes as the other person's telling you their fears, thinking, oh my God, we need to address all of these, especially if you're listening to this and you're exposed to coaching. This is not, we need to change the mindset on all of these. This is giving freedom for full expression, knowing that it may not be 100% right. It may be messy, but it's like an opening and a sharing. And that maybe there's a few good ideas in there, but they don't all have to be. So I could say, you know, today I desire, you know, a foot rub, and like, you know, I can just name things. And then maybe there's, when I get to the end of it, there's really like one that I think, oh, I really want this. A lot of them may be just exploring. So giving yourself space to not be perfect and be seen by your partner, to not actually have to do all the things that you're saying, can be super, super important, especially for physicians who are so used to, I only speak about it if I'm 100% certain and I have a plan and it's correct and something that my partner can do, right? Like we negotiate. So this is just giving yourself and your partner a lot of space. So it's a different way to do it. That is super, super valuable.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I think as physicians in general, we have the mindset of trying to fix things, right? We're fixers, especially, you know, not the gender stereotype, but I think men are much more guilty of doing the fixing, right? That we see ourselves as fixers. So sometimes it's helpful to just be able to listen as opposed to trying to have a plan.
Yes. And what helps with the listening is having a really clear container. So the setting is, we're going to do this for 10 minutes. We're going to talk about desires. I'm just here to hold space, to say thank you, and to take my partner in with my attention. So if you've never been on the receiving of that, it feels amazing from, you know, to stereotype again as a woman, as a feminine being. And if you've never done that for your partner, or you've been like in the fixing mode, if you're a little bit in the masculine, it can take such the edge off realizing I'm only doing this for 10 minutes. It's very clear what we're going to talk about. And my only job is to just say thank you. And at the end, my partner may suggest, or we may decide, one or two things that in a different container we're gonna actually do something with. I think that expectation can make it a lot easier. And that's something I really believe in relationships, is creating an intention for a specific period of time, that can be really powerful.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful. That's a great exercise. I think as well as far as being the non-medical partner, I think they can feel, you know, isolated and left out and lonely at times just because of the long hours. And are there other ways that you can help with that kind of issue? Because physically, oftentimes you are not there.
Yes. So part of that, through the intimacy and the shared vision practice, you could do that specifically on this and imagine, like, how are we going to stay connected? Realizing that connection is a practice and figuring out if something's not working or if you're in training. Like, I know being med peds every month was radically different. So addressing, like, what this next month might look like and what might work, realizing that the next month may be different, but staying committed to staying in connection and putting in the time. Realizing, you know, having open talk, like, I am in the ICU this month. This is probably going to be a month where the connection is going to be limited. So how might we work with this? And not just kind of like giving up. And then using the times that you have more time and you're not on call to do more in person. But there's a ton of ways to like diving deep into these intimacy exercises let you go deep in a short period of time, which is the beauty of them. and then there's all the non-physical ways to stay connected, right? There's Marco Polo. You know, I used to send videos in the morning if I was going to leave before my partner. I bought him a chalkboard next to the bed that I would write a note on before I left. Touch points throughout the day. And then realizing that going from home to work is a transition. So how do you kind of prepare yourself for that transition? But then also going from work to home is a transition. True. And then talking honestly about what you need. I think a lot of people, and again, you know, I'm a little bit stereotyping, but it's okay to set a bound. I'm going to say this loudly. It's okay to set a boundary around your time and energy when you're super taxed in your training. It's okay to say, you know, let's really focus on my day off. I'm probably not going to be available for much after work when I'm working a 12-hour shift, whatever, insert what you like. It's okay to set the boundary, and that will actually help manage your partner's expectations. If they expect that every day when you walk in the door, you're going to be available, and you know that, like, you're just taxed.
Yeah. No, I think that is really good advice. Sometimes you just have nothing left, right?
At the end of the day. And that may trigger them. They may want something of you that you can't give. And that's actually something that happens in all relationships. It's not unique to medicine. And it's something that is, as first few years out, it's, as someone who had young kids, there will be times that someone will want more intimacy and more energy from you than you can give. And learning how to negotiate that and to talk about it is a relationship skill.
Yeah, like anything else, right? I think we're very guilty of not giving each other time for relationships, and whether that be intimate relationships or friendships, et cetera. I know when I started residency, as you know, but many of my listeners don't know, my wife and I matched 2 hours apart. And my chief at the time said, well, that's never going to work because we don't need any other unhappy residents. So break it off now, which is ridiculous. But that's, I think, as far as being supportive of each other, we certainly are guilty of being not so great sometimes.
100%. So part of my mission is to talk to, you know, younger doctors, trainees, realize that the culture is changing, that the model of, I'm just totally going to stereotype here, the model of the white male doctor going to work for long hours and the woman being at home and handling all of the other home things. That is where that toxic culture comes from. It still remains in medicine. Many of your, preceptors, the people advising you, that is the model they came from. And I mean, I hate to say, do I really hate to say? Maybe not. Maybe what I want to say is that the same way that culture progresses, people just don't know what they don't know. They've been very limited in what's possible in relationships. That's why the divorce rate, the substance abuse rate, the mental health suicide rate of physicians has been so high. And they don't, as much as they may be experts in their field, they are not the experts in work-life balance. And look for people that have what you want. Don't just think someone's your medical expert, and so they then have blanket authority to be relationship expert or money expert, right?
Well,
There's
yeah.
many people that I know I'm getting into all the things, but there's many people that are excellent physicians that you can learn from, but that doesn't make them expert on everything. Physicians as a group have mismanaged our power, have mismanaged our relationships, have mismanaged our money, and the ability to have freedom. So if someone's giving you unwanted advice on those things because you did not ask for it, which Andrew, it sounds like you did not ask for it,
Certainly not.
and questionably, like, are they expert? Or have they even created something that you want? Then just ignore it the way you would anybody else's unwanted advice, or maybe tell them, thank you for sharing. And move on.
Exactly right. I mean, I think it's unfortunate when it comes from people that are in positions of power, and the house of medicine is still very hierarchical, unfortunately. But yeah, I agree. You do you at the end of the day, right? I think the next thing I want to talk about a little bit is our colleagues that are single. Maybe not in COVID times, because it's a little bit harder in general. But for those of the people that are single, it's certainly not like it's portrayed on Grey's Anatomy all the time. I mean, maybe sometimes, but my residency certainly wasn't like that. But how do people that are single approach both the dating world? A lot of people think they can only date people within medicine because those are the only people who understand. And will others understand their kind of crazy, hectic lives? So, what kind of advice do you give to our single colleagues?
Yeah, that's such a beautiful question because in some ways it's no different. The same things that you need to date well and to show up well in your relationship, they don't actually change once you find the person that you want to partner with if you haven't done that work. So in some ways it's like really not any different, but it has a different feeling. And I think it's realizing the deep fear and messaging that we've gotten. I could speak, particularly for female identifying physicians, is that somehow there's this job relationship polarity, right? The more successful we are at work, that's not what brings us success in relationship. That I'm speaking in gender normative terms, but like men don't want powerful women, men don't want women that out earn them, that there's like this, to succeed in my career, I have to give something up. We're very judgmental of women. We're very judgmental about how they decide, I mean, as someone who is married in training, I got and pregnant a lot of the time, I got a whole host of advice about what it would mean for my children, what it would mean for my husband, continually asking for like fellowship career advice. Well, what does your husband feel about that? So just realizing that that's toxic, that's not okay for your own internalness, and realizing that that's not true. that we've kind of been told you can't have it all. And I firmly disagree. And I stand as someone who has it all, just not the way other people might have told me it should be done. And then that's okay. So I think the first hurdle to get over is this internal idea that I can't have because I've done this career route, right? Like, you know, from like coaching mindset, I can't have because other people won't understand. Realizing that there are people that understand, there are people that will love your mission and will meet you in the exact ways that you need to be met, and to not give up on that. And really, this is my same advice for people that are partnered.
Fair enough.
Don't go into the mindset of, oh no, I couldn't ask my partner this because I work too much, whatever the excuse is. That you have every right to ask it for what you deeply need and the ways that you deeply need it. That's why we form partnerships. So giving yourself permission, doing some little inventory on yourself, which is like so hard when you're, you know, in your 20s, you know, thinking about like, what do you want? Are you looking to find somebody? Are you looking for like a sexual relationship? Are you looking for dating? Just getting clear about what it is that you actually want is a lot of what I teach, and to be okay with all of it. If you really just want to have sex, be honest about that. If you want a partnership, like just figure out where you land and then what do you really need? And I would say, you know, if you're a doctor, you need someone who will understand your schedule, who wants to support your mission. I'm thinking, especially if you're, you know, non-medical. And that is not playing into this dichotomy of what especially a wife and a mom should be. Because for you, it may or may not look different. It's learning how to negotiate. And that is the skill that you're going to need in partnership.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. I never understood that. Like, I want my wife to make $1 million a year and I'll stay home all day long. That'd be great. I have no fears about that. But I remember having a colleague that was an ER doctor as well. And his wife was about to graduate HEMONC fellowship, and she got her first job offer, and it was like way more money than he made. And he was really deeply distressed about this. And I was like, this is great news. You know, maybe you could work a little less. Why get so, but he was so upset about how his wife would be out earning him. And it's just such a foreign concept to me.
Yeah. It's just conditioning. It's just this idea. You know, men get pigeonholed in it too. Like, who am I if I'm not providing this? And there's many ways to be masculine without, like, you know, bringing home that caveman meat to like give your woman. There's many ways to do that, but we haven't been modeled that, right? And then I could speak as a woman, you know, the teachers I come from and the empowerment that I teach is that, you know, as women, like if I look at my mother, my mother-in-law, they needed permission to have their own bank accounts and to own their own houses. This is a generation. These are people in their 70s. So we've in a generation moved as women from being property to requiring permission from a man to have property, to have education, to open a bank account, to have finances. In one generation, we move from being property to owning property. And there's a very different set of conditioning. So if I need a man to do all of those things, then my behavior and how I must behave and how I must keep the house is tied into feeling like I have to have that to survive. Because traditionally, women couldn't own their own property. They couldn't be educated 100 years ago, which is really like 2-3 generations back. And so I think there's still something in us because we were taught by our mamas, our grandmothers, like 3 generations, 7 generations back, that we need that in order to survive. So be careful. Make sure you're doing this right. Make sure you keep yourself safe. Make sure that you, you know, make do with what you have. Don't be too demanding. Be easy to get along with. Be pleasant in your temperament. Create a warm, like there's a lot of that conditioning that went with being property. And now we need to break that. That's why this generation is called the women of the pivot, because we now get to break out of that conditioning.
Yeah,
and that forms a lot of how we date and what we ask for in relationships and what we feel like we're able to have, right? So it's a lot more of a challenge for a woman to say, I'm actually just looking for sex. then it's much more socially acceptable to say, of course, I want a partnership, where maybe you do, maybe you don't. So it that plays into this conversation. So it's important to speak about.
Yeah, that leads me to my next kind of question is, you know, you mentioned maybe you just want to have a sexual partner. And I think there is still so much taboo nowadays and gender norms and gender discrimination, unfortunately. But it seems like it's somewhat worse within the medical community as far as just even talking about sex. And so how do we combat that as trainees and or young attendings? To just have, you know, open the conversation.
You're talking in your personal relationships, right? Not in a professional setting.
Yes.
Personal relationships. Because the same thing happens professionally, right? It's like, you know, oh gosh, like just consult OBGYN. Sex is mentioned, consult OBGYN. So the beauty of this work is that the better you are at relationships, the better you are at releasing yourself from taboos, it will inform your relationship with your patients. It will make you a better doctor because you'll be able to hold space and see them in ways that other people can't and that are needed for new generation doctors. So I want to say that this has professional ripples that are super, super powerful. So all that to say, the other practice that I recommend for intimacy, so the other practices I mentioned are super important for building love and connection. That's part of relationship. But your relationship will fizzle if you don't have passion and epic sex.
Fair enough.
You will be friends. You will hang, watch TV, and you will be bored. And the spark will go down. And you won't have a lasting relationship. Now, when I speak sex, I have actually a very expansive definition. And in my community, that's for women only. It's a protected space because women need some protection to explore this because of the conditioning that I talked about. But I have an expanded definition of sex. So when I'm talking about sex, I'm talking about everything from sensual practices, meaning the touching, the kissing, the senses, right? Like massage, like touching your partner. I'm not talking about penis and vagina sex. Like penis and vagina sex is important. But when I talk about needing a passion and a sexual connection, it can be very expansive. There's many different ways to play. And I think we've been pigeonholed into this pornographic, objectified, everything leads to penis and vagina sex and orgasm. And that when we talk about it in relationship and really in our own bodies, there's actually a really expansive definition. So I just want to speak to that part first. Because what's important about that, especially when you're early trainee, early family life, young kids, is that you still need to keep the passion and the sexual connection. But our sexual desire goes up and down, right? The more fatigued we are, under-resourced, the more demands on us. And a lot of the things that I get asked a lot is about libido mismatch and all the relationship things that can happen if you feel like your partner wants penis and vagina sex and orgasm more than you do, or the opposite. And so I think it's important to say that we cycle depending on our health, depending on the demands on us, depending on how much we're working, all of those things. And so some of the expansive definitions of sensual practices of, you know, I study tantra. So using connective practices like breathing practices together and eye gazing, there's all these ways to get that sense of turn on, passion and excitement that aren't necessarily penis and vagina orgasm sex. So I want to speak to that first. Questions about that? Other things that you think your listeners or you are curious about, Andrew?
That makes sense. That's a good point to make, because I think I agree that that's when the word sex comes to mind, that's what people think about. And yeah, I think it is important to mention that the ebb and flow of libido in general over time, especially in training, especially when you're first out, especially in pregnancy for women, you know, there's a lot that changes along this kind of journey. So I think that's an important point that you made.
So if we're going to be totally normative and we're going to assume that the male wants penis and vagina sex and the woman doesn't, right? Because this is, I think, what people picture. There's plenty of ways to play, to stay in connection, to not feel rejected, to start with things that are have a little bit more space. So sensuality is huge for women. Baths, showers together, bringing in the senses, bringing in, getting into your body. As physicians, we live in our heads. We kind of get cut off from the neck up because our brains are worth so much money, so much education. But things that drop you down into your body can be really connective. And sometimes doing that in its entirety, sometimes, you know, maybe that leads to turn on and you make a decision. So I would recommend scheduling, and this is what I recommend, scheduling sensual sessions regularly outside of sex, and then making the decision as a couple, do we want this to lead to sex? Because nothing feels worse than the massage and, you know, the other person is just like waiting for you to get relaxed and have sex. That feels like crap. So setting aside time for sensual practices with yourself or with your partner. You can use massage, you can use delicious oils, you can use furs, you can do showers, you can do sensual eating practices. There's so many different ways to play in the senses, drop down into your bodies, get turned on together. I firmly recommend that to keep the passion and the play and the excitement in your relationship outside of orgasm sex. All that to say, though, I believe in orgasm sex, super important. There's so many different kinds of orgasms. There's full body orgasms. There's, for women, like we have clitoral orgasms, G-spot orgasms, cervical orgasms, anal orgasms. There's so much that the body is possible of, and it's so important to play in that as well. I think the, you know, the big takeaway is just realizing that there's an expansiveness that if you're interested in, you know, dive in. And it's not something that we talk about. So that's something that we were taught. I don't know.
No, it wasn't. So
I didn't have that conversation growing up. Don't know about you. That didn't make
no.
it.
No, never. I never learned had about
bike safety, wearing my seatbelt, brushing my teeth. It did this, you know, it didn't make it into my childhood education. So,
or any other higher education for that matter. I don't remember having the med school class, that's for sure. But yeah, no, that's we're running out of a little bit of time here, but you know, thank you for sharing that. That's I think empowering to people in general and just having the conversation. Just to get to know the guest a little bit more. So besides all in, you know, in all of your free time, what do you like to do for fun?
What do I like to do for fun today? I'm big into all the things that I talked about. So all the tantra yogic, energetic practices, that's a regular part of my life. I love things with senses and cooking. I love exploring edges of aliveness and passion and how I use my body. So a lot of dancing practices are big for me. And I do it with my kids. It's something that's like in our family. So for anybody listening who thinks, how does she do that? How does she have time? I've always just done it as a family practice, as something that I model for them. That's a cheat. That's something that, you don't hear about, you know, as a mom, you're supposed to not be that. But those aliveness practices are things that we do as a family.
Cool. That's fun. Do you have a book recommendation for the listeners? Doesn't have to be on your specific topic. It could be anything.
I was going to say, gosh, we talked about so many different things. A book recommendation.
Could be about life in general, whatever you want. First one that comes to mind.
First one that comes to mind. Well, you know, my first teacher and how I got involved in this work and in the community I'm most in is Mama Gina, Regina Tomashore. She was my initial mentor and introduction to the work of what else is possible for a woman. And she has two books. One of them is The School of Womanly Arts. And so at the School of Womanly Arts. And so I would recommend that book as a good amazing starting place to start to think about what else might be possible.
Wonderful. Yeah. I'll put that in the show notes. You've given us a lot of advice on the show thus far, for a lot of different things, but if you could give the early career physician just a single piece of advice, what would that be?
The advice that I would give is you can have it all. You can have it all, and you can have it all at the same time. And anybody that tells you differently just hasn't experienced it.
Haters gonna hate, right?
I agree. Gonna hate.
I agree completely. Well, for those of our listeners who enjoyed this interview and perhaps want to learn a little bit more about you, where could they find you?
Yeah, so my community that is on Instagram and Facebook right now is called the Facebook community is Under the White Coat. There's also an Under the White Coat in Training, specifically as a space for trainees. And then my Instagram is Under the White Coat MD, with soon to have website that is being rebranded and under the work, and that will be Under the White Coat MD as well. So if Great. You type in Under the White Coat, you'll find me in the spaces.
Wonderful. Well, I will put all those links for the listeners in the show notes. Lisa, thank you again for coming on the show and talking about a topic we really haven't talked about before, and for all the great work you're doing for our colleagues out there. We really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much. And talking about this stuff really is a rebellious act. Every time you talk about something that you have been taught, oh goodness, what happens if I mention this? It's an act of rebellion. So for anybody that listened this far and is feeling that inner whatever, you are an act of rebellion against the system. And I just applaud you, and come find me so that we can, you know, if you want to continue to play in this area, because it's a lot of fun.
All right. For my rebellious listeners, that's all we got for today. Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you.
Such a great show with Lisa. Before we end, be sure to use your 15% off code for the On-Time MD by Dr. Phil Bauscher to gain control of your life, your focus, and your time. Reach out at drpodcastnetwork.com/On-Time MD and use code 2021 at checkout. What a great show with Lisa Tharler. I really appreciated some of the tips she gave to create and maintain intimacy in your relationships as a busy professional, as well as during training. Also, some tips for the single physicians, generally great life advice as well. It really was fun talking to Lisa. That's all I have for today. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this show, please tell your friends and colleagues and leave an honest rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps. The other thing I'd like you to do after listening is follow me on Instagram at talktomedoc_LLC. Additionally, if you're suffering from career dissatisfaction and burnout, why don't we get on the phone and chat and see how my work as a career strategist may help you. That's all we have for today. Thanks again for listening. Keep talking. All opinions expressed by the guest in this episode are solely the guest's opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Andrew Tisser DO, TalkToMe.LLC, or any affiliates thereof. The guest's opinions are based upon information he or she considers reliable, but Andrew Tisser DO, TalkToMe.LLC, nor any affiliates thereof warrant its completeness or accuracy. The guest, Andrew Tisser DO, TalkToMe.LLC, or any affiliates thereof are not under any obligation to update or correct any information provided in this episode. The guest's statements and opinions are subject to change without notice.